Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Late last week, members of the U.S. House of Representatives in the 118th Congress were officially sworn in. That followed days of chaos. It took 15 rounds of voting for the Republicans, who now make up the majority in that chamber, to elect a Speaker of the House. And finally, late Friday, they chose Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California. McCarthy made a number of concessions, especially when it comes to House rules, to win over those Republicans who did not want to vote for him, including Illinois Republican Representative Mary Miller. It's still not entirely clear just what those changes will mean for the years ahead in the House. Under the circumstances, we wanted to check in with Republican Illinois Congressman Darren LaHood. As of this year, he serves the state's 16th district, which encompasses some 18 counties spanning much of northern Illinois. He won re-election with about two-thirds of the vote there. In order to make our schedules meet, we spoke with Representative LaHood yesterday afternoon. Because our conversation's on tape, we're not taking calls live, but let us know what you thought. The email address is talk@21stshow.org. Again, talk@21stshow.org. Representative LaHood, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for making the time to speak with us.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be with you and your listeners. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. I want to start out with the election for the House Speaker. You were not among the holdouts in your party. You voted for Speaker McCarthy on every ballot. What makes you think he's the right person to lead Republicans at this time?
Well, I've had the opportunity to work with Leader McCarthy over the last 4 years as he was the minority leader and for the 7 years that I've been in Congress. I think Kevin McCarthy is, I think he's a good leader. I think he's earned the opportunity to be Speaker. He's worked very, very hard as minority leader. I think he has the right values. I think he understands politics very well. I think he knows that we have an obligation and responsibility to govern in the right way. If you look at his platform that he laid out in the fall with the election, predicated on an economy that's strong, a nation that's safe, a future built on freedom. So I think when I look at his policies, when I look at his politics, I think he earned the opportunity to do that. As we saw, it was a very messy, chaotic, unorganized process last week, but I'm happy he's in there. And I think actually the process was healthy for us as a party, and I think we came out of it stronger.
Say more about that, because I've seen some analysis that says this was sort of a grasp at relevance and power among members of the Freedom Caucus who maybe, you know, saw that their prospects are dimming in the future based on the election results last fall, for example. Why do you say this was good for the Republican Party?
Well, I think a couple observations, Brian. First of all, I think the expectations were that we're going to win a lot more seats in November. We're going to be at 240, maybe 250. We didn't, right? The red wave kind of faded. We only have 222 Republicans. So there was disappointment within my Republican Party. But I would just think from a broader perspective, when you think about our democracy, I mean, 435 is a lot of members. So democracy is messy. It's complicated. That's by design. That's what our forefathers put in place. And so having a tight governing majority of 222 Republicans, they don't all agree on, you know, who our speaker should be. And so we had that debate last week on broader issues. For instance, a lot of frustration. We're, you know, $31 trillion in debt in this country. We just had a bill at the end of December, $1.8 trillion kind of rammed down our throats. I think people are frustrated. So they want to make sure as we look at how we govern, how do we put rules in place? How do we put more transparency in place? How do we make sure that we're looking out for the best interests of taxpayers and putting fiscally responsible measures in place? That's a lot of what last week was about. So the positive rule changes that we had, the back and forth, the constructive dialogue, in the end, I think it was better to have that last week, Brian, than a month from now, 4 months from now, 6 months from now, have that debate now. And I think, again, that's what I mean about coming out stronger and having a healthy, constructive debate.
Yeah, sure. Well, you mentioned the big debt. Of course, that is a bipartisan affliction that America has had, if you look at it that way. Presidents of both parties have driven up the debt in spending. I do want to stay on this question, though, of the leadership in the House, because it's been widely reported that Speaker McCarthy had to make a number of concessions as it was vote after vote in order to get the votes he needed to become Speaker. What do you think about those changes, like limiting the Office of Congressional Ethics or making it so that one member can start this process all over again and file a motion to vacate the speaker's post?
Yeah, well, listen, I was involved with many of those conversations and that dialogue and discussion. And again, I think the provisions and the changes we had come out of it are positive. First of all, we didn't get rid of the ethics office. The ethics office still exists. We have an ethics committee that still exists. But secondly, we put in place, for instance, a motion to vacate the chair. That had been in place for 220 years, just got taken out in the last Congress. So been in there for a long time. Thirdly, we put in a provision. You need 72 hours before a bill can be voted on. Again, I talked about transparency and being able to read and digest and go over bills. I think that's a positive thing there. We put some changes in there as it relates to all 12 appropriations bills. Now, I can get into the weeds on some of these things, but I think there was a frustration of taking, again, 12 appropriations bill, putting them in an omnibus bill, and having, you know, less than 24 hours to vote on the bill. That won't happen anymore. Now, does it mean, Brian, we're going to have to spend more time in D.C.? Yes. Does it mean we're going to have late nights? Of course. We're going to be here on weekends? Yes. But I think that's what our conference, that's what the broad number of our Republican colleagues wanted changes on. And so when you look at actually what the changes are, I think most people will find them refreshing.
All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're speaking with Congressman Darren LaHood, who represents the 16th District. It goes all the way from the Wisconsin border to south of Bloomington Normal in central Illinois. And we're taping this conversation ahead of time, so we're not taking calls live today in order to make our schedules meet. But you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. So let's talk about some of the agenda. It's split government now. Democrats control the United States Senate and the presidency. Republicans control the House. What do you expect can be accomplished, can actually be signed into law by President Biden? What will be coming out of the House Republican Conference that the president and the Senate will go along with?
Well, I hope that there are many things that we can work on in a bipartisan way. I mean, listen, I look at this as, Brian, the election was heated. It was, we had a lot of back and forth. It was robust. But now the election's over. We ought to figure out how we can try to work together. When I look at the agenda that we as Republicans are going to stand for, whether it's securing the border, taking on China, reducing inflation, holding the Biden administration accountable where we need to with checks and balances. I mean, many of those things are bipartisan issues. I'll give you an example. We just voted today on a China Select Task Force, and I hopefully will be a part of that. China is an existential threat, but that's not a Republican or a Democrat issue. That's an American issue, and I think you'll have broad bipartisan support on that. I think securing the border, obviously the president, President Biden, just visited the border on Sunday. It was the first time he'd been there, but he visited there and he acknowledged that we have to do something different there. Energy independence, right? We got to get back to energy independence. I think those are three or four areas where if we craft the legislation the right way, if we come up with good policies that we can find bipartisan support to address the issues. And I would also just tell you, Brian, I think those are all issues we heard from in the election in November from, the cross section of my district and across the country.
Energy independence. That's a good one to focus in on, maybe, because it does put me in mind that I know the Rivian plant is not actually in your district. I checked the map. It looks like your district border basically abuts the parking lot of the Rivian automotive plant in Bloomington Normal. But I have read that some of the Republicans, like the new chairperson of the Ways and Means Committee, are looking to target some of those incentives for renewable energy and electric vehicles. Presumably you have constituents who work for Rivian who are in this industry. Where are you on that question of, you know, has America gone the wrong way in incentivizing this shift to electric vehicles and renewable energy?
Well, listen, I think Rivian's been a wonderful asset for the McLean County area. I did have it in my district before. Most of the employees currently live in my district. And so I've been very supportive of, and I've visited the plant there a couple different times. I have an approach when it comes to energy, kind of a all of the above energy approach. We can't just rely on fossil fuels. We have to look at nuclear. We have to look at wind. We have to look at solar. We have to look at other ideas there. And obviously, Rivian, I think, you know, is going to be around for a long time and employs a lot of people in my district. So, listen, when issues come up before the Congress that affect electric vehicles, now I will say this, I don't think the federal government should be putting their thumb on the scale on you know, subsidizing or giving undue tax breaks to companies that don't deserve it. That's been my problem in the past. But do I support innovation and creativity and what's going on at Rivian and other plants across the country? Heck yeah, that's what we believe in as the free market system and as conservatives. And so I'm going to continue to stand up for Rivian and the employees there. We want them to prosper and thrive and do well, create more jobs. And frankly, that's the future is that kind of technology that's being created there. And so I will be a strong advocate moving forward.
But it sounds like you would oppose then if say, Congressman Jason Smith, who it looks like is going to be the Ways and Means Committee chair, you know, if his committee puts forth some reductions or elimination of electric vehicle incentives, you would support that?
Well, I'll have to look at any piece of legislation, but I stand by my comments before. I think, and by the way, I have been a supporter of, you know, tax credits for wind energy and for solar. And when I served in the State House, worked on a number of those issues also. And so I will continue to be supportive of companies that are in my district. Like anything, I'm going to look at the details of the legislation instead of a hypothetical.
Fair enough. In the time we have remaining, I do want to ask you also, you this week voted to support legislation that would rescind money given to the allocated for the IRS in the Inflation Reduction Act. Democrats say this money would increase the service's enforcement abilities. Both the IRS and Treasury Department have previously said the new funding would not affect people making less than $400,000 a year. But you've said that repealing the funding would protect low-income families. Say more about that.
Well, listen, the number one issue that I hear in my district is people complain about the IRS. They can't get phone calls answered. No one returns their calls. They haven't got their tax returns. And if you look at the money that was allocated in the Inflation Reduction Act last August that included the money for roughly 87,000 new IRS agents, that money goes into enforcement, but not to the issues that I think are needed. I am supportive of the IRS hiring more people to answer phones and go through the customer service that we need in this country. But what I'm not in favor of is the enforcement where you're going after low-income, middle-income folks because, you know, let's say you're a teacher and you have a job working at a golf course in the summer and you're, you know, lower middle class, that the IRS should be auditing you for that. That's not what I'm supportive of. And I think that's what's made a lot of my constituents upset. I'm all for more resources in modernizing the IRS, making sure people are getting their tax returns, they're being processed correctly, people are getting the customer service they need, not on the enforcement side.
As we're coming to the end of our time together, there are people out there who look at last week, and you said this was good for the Republican Party. It was sort of a messy exercise in democracy, hashing out differences in public. But, you know, I know at least one of your colleagues filed an impeachment resolution against President Biden in the last Congress. There's been talk of doing more of that and investigations. Do you think that policy is going to be swallowed by these other sort of political? How do you, as somebody who is not a member of the Freedom Caucus, how do you keep those things from swallowing what the mainstream of Republicans are trying to get done in Congress?
Well, listen, I think it's a balance. As I mentioned, the issues that I ran on in my reelection in November were, again, securing the border, taking on China, holding the Biden administration accountable, reducing inflation. And as a member of the Ways and Means Committee and as a member of the Intelligence Committee, I look forward to diving in on policy now that we have the majority, focusing on issues that are attentive to the American people. I can just speak for myself, Brian, that that's what I'm going to focus on. Now, I also will tell you, part of our obligation under the checks and balances of our constitutional system is we do have to hold the Biden administration accountable. We have to be a check. But I think there's a balance. As a former federal prosecutor, as someone that's been on the advocacy side as a prosecutor, listen, there should be appropriate checks and balances. And our committees are going to do that. But it has to be done in a balanced way. has to be done the proper way. And I think you'll see that. But if you think about it, many of these Biden administration officials have not come up to Congress, been put under oath. And so I think you'll see more of that. I think what you'll see is a approach that focuses on policy on the issues that I talked about at the beginning, but secondly, also a check and finding that right balance. I think Leader McCarthy has set the right tone on that. I look forward to being part of a constructive dialogue on both those issues.
Congressman Darren LaHood represents the 16th District of Illinois. He's a Republican. That district stretches from the Wisconsin border down to central Illinois. Congressman LaHood, thank you for taking the time to be with us on the 21st show.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be with you.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st show. Stay with us.